me if we're going to be tweeting later. These slides are online, so if you want to just follow along, go ahead in the bit.ly. I work at Twitter right now, but I'm going to be talking about some other things that I do in my spare time. Of course, I think the hashtag is FQA in case we want to be pinging me later. So today's subjects, I want to talk about kind of two things and how they work together. One, of course, is code and development, and specifically like open source front-end development, and that's what I do, and I think everybody in this room is probably interested in that. And the other one is money. And maybe not necessarily money, you know, but more like time and pretty much the cost of things like that, or even like trying to get more abstract with it. Thinking about like the scarcity of the stuff you have, of resources, and typically, I went to college, we had a whole subject on this, it was economics, so I didn't learn much from that, but I'm going to try to maybe kind of relate these two things together. But before I get into that, I want to talk about view source. When I think of front-end development and our craft, I can think of no better resource that we have than view source. It's incredible. It's something that we all use so much every day. It's kind of just a part of what we are. It's what we do. It's so integrated. It's almost like breathing, you know? It's like an invisible act. It's just what we do. But what's incredible about it is that it's an essential learning tool that anybody that sees kind of any page can look into it and see the fundamental components behind it. And it's universally available on every browser. It's kind of like you get a watch and you're able to look inside and see all the various clock parts inside it, right? You get to see all the little machinations, how things move together. But it's even more incredible than that, because it's not just, you just doing one watch to practice on if you're working in a workshop, right? You don't just one to practice on. You get to look at anybody's watch. Anybody's watch that is wearing it, you get to look right into it. So the things that we make, it's not only just that we make them and produce them. Each one is an essential learning tool that we pass on to one another. And it's also very important that this tool is free, if we think about it, right? It doesn't cost any money, it comes part of the browser, you don't have to pay for it. Where you think, like, I went to university in the United States, that costs a lot of money. But the tools that we have, anybody has free access to. So if you think about the implications for that and the economic environment for development, for working in the what we do, it's really like a low barrier to get into it. All you need is a browser. The browser already has view source. And it creates this incredible environment, really, for people that are creative. If you want to make stuff and actually show it somewhere, you're able to do it. It's also an incredible environment for if you're curious and just want to see what's going on underneath the hood. And because of this, people are going to make things. They're just by their own sheer will of being interested in these subjects, they're going to be producing things. And so we have these incredible tools all around our craft. And some of them, you know, we use every day, like Modernizer, HTML5 Boilerplate. Thank you, Matthias, for coming here. And also, you know, Bootstrap, formerly of Twitter. But we have these great tools because people kind of have just the impetus to make them themselves. Now, of course, some of these were built out of works for clients or works for on projects. But I think what's special about our craft is that these tools that we use every day are side projects. You know, these are things that were made kind of outside of the thing that makes the money. They're done like almost as a pet project, as an act of love. And of course, side projects are great, right? This has been talked about before. And everybody knows it, you know, so you get to work on things that interest you and things that excite you. And you get to kind of use things that you might not have always been able to use. You get to work those underused muscles, get real buff. And basically build a brand for yourself and put your own name on it, making that personal brand. And if it's good enough, or even if it's interesting, you get to contribute to something that's much larger yourself and give that tool to the entire community. So side projects are great, and they satisfy all these needs, which you probably don't get to address at your typical day job. And it's great that we have side projects. And I think the other interesting thing is that these other side projects, they're typically released for free. The ones I mentioned and pretty much anything that you get on GitHub, it doesn't cost anything. This is something that is omnipresent throughout our profession, it feels. And it builds this culture of free, if you think about it, right? It's particular to what we do as front-end developers, I think primarily because of ViewSource, right? There is no way that you can kind of put something behind the scenes and prevent somebody from getting it, because the things we make are always accessible because of ViewSource. But speaking to the bigger culture of free, you know, the things I mentioned, they don't cost any money. So you can learn for free, right? You can use other things. You don't have to pay for the other tools you make, the tools to make tools. And then even it's free to like market your stuff. I think everybody is very excited to share what's cool and what's interesting. There's a lot of people out there now, myself included in this, that want to share something that's fascinating, that's great work. And it's free to market yourself. Which, if you try to think about, like if you make a movie, if you want people to talk about your movie, you need to like get in touch with other people and you really like schmooze it up and make deals happen. Whereas opposed to an art craft and what we do, if your stuff is good enough or just like interesting or fascinating, it's gonna spark some fire and it's gonna catch. It's free to do these things. I'd like to think of it, it's the ideal environment for the impulsively creative. If you just want to make something and get it out there, HTML and what we do it's perfect for this. So I'm going to talk a little bit about an open source resource that I made. It's called Masonry, just the brief history of it. Give me a moment here. So this is what it is. This is working at 800 pixels wide on the screen. I'm actually really impressed with myself here that it's actually holding up. So it's this thing, and I think you may have seen it before, right? So you have a couple boxes, and they get rearranged into this. It's basically a JavaScript thing. It's a jQuery plugin. I made it a while ago, like several years ago, and you know it starts getting kind of picked up. I was real lucky to be linked by Andy Clark. That's what his page looks like now, and some other kind of like high-profile designers, like Cameron Mall. Eventually, gets on Daring Fireball, and I think this is the path that happens with other resources out there, other things that are kind of neat. For whatever reason, you know, like I said about marketing, these things kind of like spark unto themselves. But at this point, you know, like when the word finally gets out, it starts getting incorporated. Elsewhere on the web, and it starts becoming a part of the web community. It was picked up by WordPress themes, and then part of, you know, put into Tumblr themes. And it eventually becomes like the visual language for the web. It's not just a resource itself, it's just like another toolkit that people can use and incorporate, right? And of course, I mean, if I'm gonna be talking about Masonry, I have to mention Pinterest, right? Now, I should say that Pinterest, the developers, they have crafted their own experience or their own solution. So they don't use any of my code. However, I would like to think that I had like a little influence possibly in getting to that point. But of course, yeah, once Pinterest, I mean, hits, I mean, then I've just been just rolling in it, right? But seriously. Once it got to the point of popularity, there's a whole nother side to that, right? Which is like managing the success of an open source resource. And that's kind of like the meat of what I'm gonna get to today. In my case, I started getting a lot of contact, just emails and things coming in on GitHub, pull requests, all these like good problems, you know, that people are interested and things are coming my way, responses. People putting questions up on Stack Overflow or even just sending me tweets and pinging me like that. Most of these came in the form of support requests, right? Which are typically from people that are interested. They can use the web and they can kind of craft their own experience, but they're typically novice users, I'd like to think, or people that are just having trouble. And I'd like to think that, you know, it was most people didn't have a problem with it, or if they're like you and me, or people that are interested in the craft, they usually just figure it out. So it's typically like a small fraction of the user base that probably pinged me for when they're having trouble with masonry. And typically their email, their contact was something like this, like, hey, I tried it, I tried this, I tried that, I just can't figure it out, and it's just not working for me. Now, individually, each support request is manageable, right? The person takes 5 minutes, they can't figure it out. It's 5 minutes of their time, which of course is free to them. They can contact me, and it typically takes me like 30 minutes to an hour to like look at the problem, look at their website, perhaps craft a demo or something like that, put that online, email them back, and get it all going. So it's a short amount of time, and each one by themselves can be handled. However, in total, all of them together, they begin to pile up. To the point where, like, I wanted to employ like this, what I think is like the jerk face, like open source attitude, which goes something like, hey, it's open source, you figure it out. And I made a GIF for this, so let's see if we can actually take a look at it. That this is open source, so you're free to use this in your own projects. But really, that's not fair, right? To say to deal with it, because that kind of goes against what we're all about. This is a really friendly culture. But I really had to manage this open source project of mine. It took time out of my life, about 8 hours a week, which doesn't sound like a lot, but this is the part of my life that like I get to, you know, the free time that you get. So it's a really special time for me. And if I'm spending too much of it doing things that I'm not enjoying, that's obviously a problem. I'm updating documentation, I'm writing new demos, or maybe I'm putting in new features. But most of my time is really kind of be supporting other people's requests. So it's, like I said at the top, it's a matter of the scarcity of this, right? I only have so much of my time, and there's only so many hours in the day. So it comes down to like a matter of cost, right? If you start thinking about it in this way, even though it's great to be contributing to these things, it has a cost to it. And I start thinking about this question, right? Like, how valuable is my time? And so instead of thinking of the open source project for all the great reasons that it is, right? Instead of thinking about these benefits of it and trying to quantify that, putting in all of the project in terms of a question like, why don't I just put a price on this and put like a monetary value on my work? Which is like a novel idea, I think, when you talk about like open source things, right? But if you think about it in the abstract way, once you put a price on something, that the users, they have to make a value judgment, because money is something that is tangible, right? They either have it in their wallet or they can see it in a bank account. And so when you're going to use something and it costs them money with it, you have to ask yourself the question, is it worth it? Is it worth the money to spend on this? Now, it's interesting to talk about this in front of development, but there's other designers and developers that like make money, right? They have all marketplace. Think of like the App Store for iOS or for Android, or other people that are in the web world, like, you know, there's WordPress themes and premium Tumblr themes. Expression Engine has its own commercial add-ons kind of market. Or if you're a designer, there's icon packs, like Geomicons or Pictos. And now there's even a whole kind of other market that's springing up because of Kickstarter. But that's like kind of producing for physical goods, typically, when they ship. But that's not to say that it hasn't been tried before, right? So you have to wonder about, like, is there a market for what I was trying to do? There was never going to be a way that I was going to be able to prevent people from getting the thing, right? Like, as I mentioned before, there's no way to put up a paywall. And so there's no way to say, like, I can't steal it because of view source, as I've mentioned at the top. But there's other people that try to kind of get into it. So the first one that I, at least that I know of, was Fancy Zoom by Panic, which is a JavaScript kind of thing. So let's see if this page actually works in the iframe. So you know, it's like a lightbox thing here. And you click on an image and something pops up. And what's really cool is that when Cable at Panic released it, you put it in like these terms where it's like, hey, you have to pay for it. So his wording was, you know, like, I'll just read it right here. In a bit of an experiment, if your website is commercial, for example, if it makes you money, you can license Fancy Zoom for $39 per site, a one-time fee. Kind of like a real novel idea here that, hey, this is work and we're selling it, it's a product. There's some other examples like Widgmo, which packages up jQuery plugins, has some really cool jQuery plugins. And there's been some other innovators in this space. Nick Stackenberg, Shadowbot.js, the Impact.js game engine, and recently Views.js by Raji. So I was putting together a new product, thinking about this as something that I was going to sell, not just like an open source resource. It's called Isotope. So, you know, it's pretty cool. It does this, right? So neat little animations. So it's like a nice like resource, right? It's a jQuery plugin. I'll just briefly go over the what it does. Like you said, it's animated filtering and sorting, and it has like kind of neat layouts. You know, so there's some cool like dev going on behind the scenes too. But what's not really interesting is what it is, but thinking about this open source resource as something that I was selling, as an actual product, right? I still want it to be open source, so it is available on GitHub. And what I decided is that I was going to adopt the Fancy Zoom licensing model. So basically, all I'm doing is like asking people to pay me for my work. It's like, so it's a one-time licensing fee. You pay it once, you get to use it as much as you want in all your commercial projects. So I have the project, but there's like another point to like actually getting like the money into my hands. And there's been other attempts to this, right? So GitHub used to have a kind of like donation kind of button on their pages. There's also things called like Flatter, which is you have to set up money. It goes different places. And of course you could like put up like a generic PayPal donation button. Now, these are all solutions that I've kind of been like attempted, but I really wasn't happy with any one of these. For example, we'll see if we can load this, but load up the modernizer page. So modernizer is a great resource, and I don't know if the page is going to come up, but it has like, hey, donate to modernizer on their page. But what happens is when you click that button, it shows up and the email address is Farouk's email. He's one of the contributors, farouk.atesh@me.com. So I felt like that was a bit of a disconnect because I'm like, I'm sure that Farouk works out the money and things like that, but for somebody that wants to contribute to it and then seeing one person's name on it as opposed to the entire team or kind of like a collective email, that kind of like made me feel like a little weird. Because, you know, this is my money and I want to make sure it's distributed properly. So it was very important for me to actually have something that I felt was proper. So, you know, I made an actual company. It's our cute logo, and it's a proper legal entity. And this is important because I wanted to, you know, get legitimate and actually have something that was true and that's something that people could understand. An important part of it is that my employers at the time at Include, they were okay with it. They were really behind me putting out my own work and kind of being a better developer. They saw it as an advantage to them, and they really supported me in it. So Metaphysi is like a legitimate company, and this is important because if you think about what companies do, is that they make money instead of just putting it my own name on it. And so I had like all the things together, right? Giving the product in a way using PolyApp. So this is what the website looks like. And it hooks into PayPal. What happens is that a customer can make a purchase. And afterwards, once they go through the PayPal, the email gets sent with their product. Now with Isotope, there's actually no product because everything is like still available online. So it's like, I don't know, are they really actually getting anything? This is where I should have put my Bermuda pic, but I was in Bermuda recently, and we go onto the beach, and there's this hut, and it basically says, like, hey, if you want rental beach equipment, you know, feel free to, or not feel free, but hey, this is how it's going to work. You put the money in the box, and you get out the rental equipment. And I saw it, I was like, oh my God, this is the same model that I'm using for my own company, basically, because you could just... You don't necessarily, anybody could just go into the hut and just take out the chair, right? But it's basically asking you to say, hey, we're working on a, basically the honor system here that you're gonna pay for what we're gonna use. So as a commercial enterprise, I'd be beholden to paying customers because there's actually like a legal thing that happens here. And so, you know, I was thinking about it in a different way as opposed to just like being open source. And I can't really employ that attitude with my funny GIF anymore, right? It's a legitimate business now. And it's also kind of weird, you know, like charging money for it. Does it feel kind of sleazy as an open source developer? Even talking about it, it's always like kind of weird to like mention money. Like nobody really wants to like say that the things we make are actually worth something. I feel like it's kind of a bit like going against the ideal of open source and things being free and always available. But I had everything together. The product, the way to get it out there, and the actual legal company. And so the price came out, it was originally $37. It's now sold at $25. But the results have been absolutely incredible. I just basically asked people to pay me. And last year, it made up about 25% of my income, which is a substantial amount for me. So I was able to pay off my car loan and my student loan. And these are like big kind of like debt things. And I'm not just trying to like brag about the money here, but it impacted my quality of life. So the thing, which is really important, you know, because usually typically we make stuff and we make it because it feels good. But this is, I made it and it actually helped out my life. Of course, it's not just like for free, right? I actually had to like put something into it. So I saved about like 20% of my working time was developing this product. And money is not necessarily completely evil, because people that are interested in the product and the things that they make, they want to be invested in what they do. And so allowing them to pay for it is actually a benefit to them too, because it allows like non-technical people to contribute to the project in the way that they wouldn't otherwise, right? They can't develop their own code, but they can contribute financially. So I don't necessarily think it's a silver bullet. It's not gonna solve all our problems putting a price on something. However, I do think this is a good idea. And just like putting a project up on GitHub, I think we should all take this idea and fork it, right? I don't know if this is the perfect solution, but I do know this could be a way forward. So if support emails are like really bugging you, just think about it. I recently spoke with Scott Robin. A while ago, he's a developer in Chicago, and he makes a couple real cool jQuery plugins like jQuery Backstress. And I was talking to him about the same kind of model, and he actually kind of picked it up himself, right? So he's got like a premium support thing. So if you want to email him, it's actually going to cost you money. So hopefully, I would love to see other people kind of take up this model and try it out. I think it can like really work to our advantage. I believe there's a huge market for what we do and for actually putting a price on things. I hope I get competitors, and I hope people have to decide against my product and what they spend on others. Because if you're putting in the work and you're not getting that value out of it, if it's costing something, it's just doesn't scale to the point where people can start emailing you and it's costing you too much. If you think about it in economic terms, you know, it's basically a deficit that you're working at. And I like to just think of it in this way. There is nothing wrong with making money off of honest work. And so with that, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for being a great audience.
All right, thank you very much. We have quite some time for Q&A now, that's good. Even if your images didn't show up and stuff. So join me on my corner here. So you wrote the slides this morning, the system and the slides?
No, they've been in process for a while. Well, I was thinking about that Bermuda thing. I was like, I should add this, and then I...
Yeah. We had a restaurant in my hometown, actually, that said, pay as much as you think the food was worth. And it worked out really well for them.
Yeah, so I've heard about other situations, like at a library or a bookstore, where, you know, it's like there's a big sign that says, hey, pay as much as you want. I trust you. You know, I trust that you value this. So it's not just applied to code, too. It happens in other kind of sectors.
So there are a few questions coming in, and... one of them, an interesting one, is like, are people more demanding in support after paying for the plugin?
I originally had a whole support model where you could pay me. I said, hey, you know, you pay for the product, I'll be happy to work on this for you because you're a paying customer. And it was good for a while, but it started taking up too much of my time. I work on this as a side project, right? Like I work every day at Twitter, and then like I come home and maybe work on that stuff. And so again, it was taking too much time out of my day, so I just decided to remove it from the product. And I still kind of like, I'm not good at it, right? I'm not good at doing support and helping people because I had the expertise and I could really be invested in what they do and help out my customers. So I'm not really good at it, and I hope there's people in the audience that can like help out like how we really do support on a larger scale. So it's not just one-on-one transactions. So support requests like did keep on coming in, and they still come in, but kind of right now I just put up a disclaimer and say, nah, I don't know if I'm going to be good at it.
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, that's what I liked about the... I mean, there was the classic blog post by pinboard.in that basically said, like, I'm not free. I cost $10 from the very beginning because I want to be able to support my product. I want to be able that in a year's time, you can use Pinboard without me being bought by another company or without me having to shut it down because some investor tells me I have to do it. So it's quite a step to actually say, like, if you pay for it, then you should be getting something for it. On the other side, mm-hmm. there were like when Sparrow got bought the other day and basically pasture sourced, as I call it, we put it out in the open and hope somebody does something with it. A lot of people complained about this, and somebody else wrote like, he owns you nothing. He's like, it's a $10 app that basically that's two coffees. So let's not get over our head ourselves as developers and say like, hey, I paid you $10, where's my gold-plated car that you promised me with that? Do you think our community as a whole or the web development community is cannibalizing itself by not clicking on each other's ads and not paying for things?
Well, I think it's if we're developers, like this is a problem we need to solve, right? Like it's a software problem. Is advertising the right model? You know, I don't know. Is the App Store wasn't able to sustain Sparrow as an independent business, or I mean, maybe they were going down a different path anyway. But people are willing to put their dollar towards something that they believe in. And like I said, like that gives them a route to actually be invested in something. I do think that not enough people are kind of talking about how to put money next to code, right? Typically, we're making things to build other things. We're making tools to make tools, as opposed to, and eventually that tool will have a product, and that product does something. It's a website, or it sustains a service. So this is kind of like a more direct way of putting, instead of having a tool to make a tool to have a service to get you money, is putting the dollar value on the original tool, right? Just like you would for things that you do for fixing up your house.
It's quite interesting, because seeing that like things like, not necessarily like masonry, but people charge for jQuery like carousels, for example, and it doesn't work. It's right now people like don't want to pay for it or just hack it or whatever. Whereas with Flash image galleries, people never complained. They just downloaded it and basically paid for it because they couldn't see the source code. So it seems like our own ability to hack with the systems that we have is actually stopping it from being taken seriously as something, I'm not allowed to touch this. I'm allowed to use it, but I'm not allowed to actually remove the restrictions by hand. Because it's harder to actually find out if your jQuery has been cracked than a game has been cracked and the copy protection has been taken away from it, because by default we don't have it.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the decisions I had to make when I was releasing the software was like, am I okay if people just take this and not pay for me properly? And I felt like that was a fair trade, you know? If I'm just going to typically go through this route and it's going to happen, it's okay to kind of like go through with that and just let it take its own course. So it was a bit of an experiment, and I'm happy to say that it worked out successfully. And I'm interested to see how it's going to like work out for others. Now, if it's not happening, if the carousel people aren't actually bringing in money, like that concerns me a bit. So I would like to like look at that and say like, okay, why is this product not working where I've had success in it, and how can we resolve that? Really, is it a problem with like it not being compelling enough, or is it a problem with like the actual interaction between actually making the payment? So there's still like solutions I'm looking into. Like I'm really not happy with using PayPal and stuff like that. That blocks out a lot of the customers that are in the Middle East, which is again like a problem when you think about open source and that it's available to everybody in the world. And then there's a developer who's like really interested in you in the Middle East in an exotic place in the world that you never even considered, and they're trying to do the right thing here, but and then I put up like kind of a wall saying like my service doesn't work. So I'm concerned if people aren't finding the same success, and I hope that we can look to solutions to get that. I think these are problems that are interesting and that are worth actually like making code for.
Good question here, and I'm gonna follow it up with more later. Should people who fork the project in order to contribute also pay? How will you know in advance that they are contributors?
So yeah, it is open source and it is on GitHub. And when people are contributing to the project, I still haven't really had a proper solution for that. So typically, it's like it goes like an email, being like, "Hey, thank you for the code, but just so you know, like this is my product, like this is my work. I'm going to be profiting on this." And then I'm, might kind of give like a donation to them or a payment to them, just so a way that, I don't know, it feels like one-on-one at that point, right? Like if you're giving me something, like I value it, so I'm gonna pay for it. But again, it like always kind of feels weird to like talk about money and things like that, you know? It's like if somebody picks you up for the airport and they're your friend, like they're gonna do it, or as opposed to like paying for a cab. And then, do you want to pay your friend for it? You know, if they're a friend, they should want to do it. So it always feels weird. And typically, when I get the project forked, I've actually been hesitant to actually let the code in because then I'm worried about how they'll feel about it. So I actually close more pull requests than I add in.
But then you can't call it open source. I think that's the main misunderstanding here. I had to learn this starting to work at Yahoo, at Mozilla, because when you go to FOSDEM for the first time and you have some guy who's very, very intense nailing you against the wall and talking about LGPL license versus BSD license and other things for a half hour, then you realize that there's a whole world of people that take open source really, really serious, a lot of them making money with it as well. And the main understanding is that open source is not bringing the code out there, but actually building the code with a community and already with an environment that way that supports people. So you give code out, but open source means that contribution should go in constantly. And also the sharing when money comes in needs to be shared. I'm not, that's not saying that you're doing it wrong. It's just this is how I learned it as well. I'm like, whoa, it's just not good enough to put something on GitHub and call it open source. I mean, there's the saying of ta-da source, like, ta-da, it's here, and now you can play with the code, but you're not allowed to contribute to it or put things in there on top of that. I think in your case, the other issue is that it's reliant on jQuery, which is another open project that brings even more problems in there, because if somebody, like, if a government agency, for example, would try to use one of your products, they would have to look if jQuery is okay to be used, and that was only after Microsoft okayed it. Then it's actually okay to use it in a commercial product fully. And then if people have to actually do audits on your own code before they're allowed to use it. So it's a very dangerous point that we're actually killing, or antagonizing the FOSS community as web developers by just saying, like, that's free, but I'm not going to support it. It's, you can use it yourself, and hopefully you do something cool with it. That is not why open source became a success.
I think you touched upon so many complications with saying about open source, and the ideal of it, right, that it's, you contribute to it, and that other people can contribute to it. But you have to support it, so that takes time out of your day, and like this is kind of a solution I propose to address that. But then it gets into other things where it's the licensing problem. It's the recursive kind of licensing, if it's like GPL and things like that, the waters get muddy. And so like a lot of the stuff we have is very, very much like ta-da. What was it, ta-da source?
Yeah.
I feel like that's a great attitude to have. To put something there, but then the other side of it about supporting it, these are bigger problems, and I don't know how to take care of all of them.
It's very hard for us to make that step. It's like if we release something, we should also think about we will get lots and lots of emails that have to be answered, and if it's only in our free time with a normal job on the side, maybe we should subcontract or hire somebody to do that. So the good thing about an open source project that is built with a community is that this is already built in. You throw out the idea first rather than building or the stub and then build the code with other people. A really great example right now is Brackets by Adobe. That's the first open source project that they ever do, and they did a great job with that. I mean, if you haven't looked at it yet, they actually do a 24-hour pull request answering on GitHub. Requests from the outside take precedence over requests that come from Adobe developers. So that's the kind of attitude that they bring in from the very beginning, and that I don't even want to know how the meetings went inside Adobe to try to sell that to managers there. But it's the only way you can actually make it sustainable. And it's good that we make money, but I find our community cannibalizing ourselves. I get reminded of the punk industry, of the punk scene. You sing in a punk band, everybody loves you. You bring your first CD out, oh, these guys are commercial, I'm not supporting them anymore. Do you find the same thing? Do you get lashback that people tell you, why are you charging money now? You've, in the past, Masonry was free?
Yeah, I definitely got a couple kind of like angrier emails. And I think that's, there's a lot of stuff that's going behind the scenes that I don't see. There probably is people in this room that were, that may not like really want to fight for me like making money, that support that idea. And I think that's completely fair. So it is a risk to put yourself up here and say, like, hey, This is kind of a new idea. People might not like it, but I think it's worth talking about. And like that's why I hope like others kind of either address it or try what I'm doing or say it's terrible, you know? Let's have a discussion about this. Because like you said, like is the open source model sustainable? In the case of Adobe, like they have to build up the entire infrastructure to support brackets. They have to hire people to do that. And they have to have managers looking on it. Are they hitting their service levels? A lot of things have to go into that to support that one product being open source. And most of our projects now, it's just us in our free time. So
isn't that the problem, that most of the free time web development front end things are happening in people's free time rather than companies having a 20% model or the hack day model that Yahoo had to actually allow for these kind of things? I mean, Bootstrap is a great example. And one of the questions was like, well, Bootstrap was not a free time project.
It's not. Yeah, it was developed for Twitter. It eventually worked its way to being open source. So I can't speak directly to that. I got to work with Mark Otto for a little bit. But with talking with him about Bootstrap, he was like, they have something like 4,000 issues on GitHub, some astronomical number. And Fat, the JavaScript developer, I mean, he had to develop a solution so he could mass close pull requests or issues like that. So it's called Haunt. But it's like he had to develop a solution just to like keep the noise filter down. It came out of the company, but when I was talking to him one-on-one, it was like, yeah, it's still like two guys looking at this when they have time to do it. And we have a lot of open source projects at Twitter, but eventually we're building Twitter. So we make tools to make Twitter, but it still comes down to the same thing, where it's like you still have only so many working hours in your day, even if you're working at the company. So you might make the tool, but you can't be invested in sustaining that tool if you have to think about building the larger product. So yeah, maybe companies should be looking at like, okay, this is a core business. Is going to be sustaining this tool and helping out developers work with it.
It's an incredibly good tool to hire people. Contributors to a project that like Bootstrap is something that Twitter could pick and choose from developers rather than going to a hiring agency and paying them lots of money to find engineers. I mean, at Mozilla, we've got 20,000 contributors and 400 people working. So it really works. It's just a matter of like really understanding open source and throwing it out there. I had a 4-hour discussion with Alex Russell about this when he told me that YOI is not open source versus Dojo. So it will be interesting to see what's coming on. Yaron Wagering is coming next, and he did actually the JW player, the video player, which was open source and also is a good business. So it is possible. It's just a matter of like, maybe it's too easy to make a plugin and to get them out. There's on rough estimation 2.3 million jQuery plugins out there, because people look at something like you did, oh, I can code that as well. Rather than reading his specs and understanding how he used it and paying for it, I can do another one. Do you think there's a lot of duplication going on in that market that we have right now?
I mean, that's okay. It's I think that's good, right? Is to have a lot of competition and things that get forked. In fact, you know, like if you think about just like all the various like carousel plugins, like and typically if we're working on something, or if I'm working on something and I've talked to other people about this, you typically write your own for each project each time, right? Until you're like, whatever, I'll just use this one. But that's good. It's good to have a diverse market out there and different solutions competing for one another, and even with different ways about distributing it. So I think it's okay to have a wide array of selections.
But isn't the idea of jQuery plugins to make the life easier for implementers out there? I have to build a website for a client. I want to have an image gallery. I shouldn't have to spend 3 hours going through 6,000 jQuery plugins, carousel plugins, until to find one that I want.
Yeah, and yeah, it's like just on carousel plugins, and does it work? Does it not? I feel that you're somebody in this room, so you make your own plugin, or you're somebody that just needs an image gallery and you copy paste the code, right? So, to your question, I think it's important that, you know, these things are available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last one, somebody said, what about packaging? What about minifying? What about uglifying? Do you think it's an idea? Do you think it's versatile? But I mean, with dev tools, I can walk around these issues nowadays.
Yeah, like I decided might as well just keep it, like, have it unminified, fully documented, and not keep that stuff behind a paywall. With Raji and views.js, I think that's, clearly you can get to that script, so you can copy paste that script. And so, but there is kind of like a paywall that I don't think he, you get the documentation, like the unminified source. So that is a way if you're worried about people just taking your code. In my case, I think it worked to my advantage, having everything open, people are able to inspect the product before they actually want to purchase it. So, like I said, like I don't think I had the perfect solution, but it worked out for me. I'm interested to see what others, how they take it.
The view source is interesting. I mean, as Marcin showed, like people are looking at the view source, learning things from it. Rob Hawks, who works with me, did a game, and people actually hacked the game, so to say, and wrote their own weapons in JavaScript and things. And he said he loved it because he learned from that how to actually come up with new features for his game as well. So we can turn that kind of like, oh, open is evil, everybody can look at my code, to actually turn it into features if we just put the infrastructure in place. So, but it's an uphill battle, and if you do it in your free time, there's no free time left.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I like eating Doritos and watching cartoons. Like, that's a part of my life, and so having that free time there is, you know, very good for all of us. But having something that people can look at and learn from, I mean, that's how we all learn. It's just like looking, viewing source, copying and pasting that in your own thing, and then deleting stuff. See, does it work? Did it change? Did that code mean anything? So that's great for our industry, is having view source and letting open that up so people can take a look at things and actually change things around. That's how we all learn. That's why I decided to keep my stuff open source. So yeah, I think it's great that other people can get invested in it. It's also interesting to see that you might do a ta-da thing and other people might take it over. So having stuff as open source is great, but yeah, like you said, so getting that infrastructure in place, I don't know if that's been completely resolved yet. So I'm excited to learn what you guys do at Mozilla.
I mean, one, it might be just a geek thing. As geeks, we want to do everything ourselves because we don't trust anybody else to be as good at understanding it as we are, which is most of the time a completely false assumption. So when you find five fans of your product and you ask them, hey, do you want to help other people with answering emails and stuff, and we do a sharing of the income of the product, that might be a start of something. Maybe it's just a matter of starting to communicate more with each other and saying, like, I own this, I love it to bits, nobody's else going to touch it, and half a year later, I love the next bit now, and I don't like that anymore, and please don't send me any emails about it.
Yeah, I was talking with Fat about open source stuff, and he mentioned, like how did jQuery come to be, you know, where they have a board, and they have core developers, and they have this whole organization that is not just like John Resig, right, where it eventually started. And I think that whole transition from just one person working in a room and working on it to getting other people involved, I don't know how to make that transition, and I'm fascinated by how it happens.
There's actually a talk at jQuery Europe last year, how they started the whole thing started.
Yeah.
There's a video out there as well.
I gotta watch that video.
With that, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, we have half an hour break now. Get your